Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A backyard bird feeder is an essential for every home, but there are some best practices for you and the birds to get the most out of that feeding station. And there are questions like, how helpful is a bird feeder to the local avian population, and what bird species benefit the most from a bird feeder, and what kind of seeds should I stock in that feeder? And today we're going to get you the answers. We're joined by Jennifer Smith, a professor in the UTSA Department of Integrative Biology. And Jennifer Smith, welcome to The S'morse.
Thanks for having me.
So a backyard bird feeder, I mean, what's a home without a backyard bird feeder, right? You have to have one.
Yeah, that's a good question. Certainly I love having bird feeders in my backyard, and they attract a wide range of birds, which of course most of us like birds, so that's nice to have them in your backyard, yeah.
So our phone lines are open. If you got a question, a comment, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What questions do you have about getting the most out of your backyard bird feeder and helping the local birds? And what kind of birds do you see? Do you already have a whole station there set up in your backyard? What are you seeing? We'd love to hear your report. Let's go into the hive mind about local bird population. So what attracted me, Jennifer, to reach out to you was the study that y'all did about backyard bird feeders in San Antonio, looking at what birds were attracted to them. What did y'all see with the population? Tell me about this study.
Yeah, so this study was led by my master's student, Amanda Lamberton, and we conducted over two winter field seasons, and we put bird feed out. And then in the second year, we didn't have bird food out, and we used two regularly consumed bird foods here in San Antonio, and looked at basically whether or not that attracted birds. So ask the question, does this increase abundance of birds in your backyard, and does it increase diversity? And what we found was, if you put mixed seed out, yes, it does increase abundance of birds in your backyards. And it tended to have an effect on diversity too, but those results weren't significant. And a second bird food was Niger seed. So many of you will be familiar with that.
I am not familiar with that.
Okay.
So slow down a little bit.
Yeah. So Niger seed is a food that attracts goldfinches. And it's kind of a smaller seed and one seed type compared to mixed seed, which has lots of different types of seed in it. And so lots more birds are attracted to mixed seed compared to Niger seed. So when we put Niger seed out, although we did expect abundance of birds to increase because of things like goldfinches, which are attracted to Niger seed, we didn't see an increase in abundance or diversity. But we did with that mixed seed, which had a broader range of different seed types in it.
So when you put out a bird feeder, you have to be aware of, like, what's the best location to put that. So what should people be thinking? I mean, y'all measured everything. You have mm-hmm. to control all the variables, mm-hmm. like the height from the ground. And so what did y'all do to try to maximize the benefit?
Yeah, so there's a number of things that I can recommend and what we did. So, for example, you don't want to place a feeder too close to a window where a bird might fly into the window post-feeding. The second thing is to think about how high it is above the ground and how close it is to vegetation, for example, that a predator could climb on and jump onto the feeder and then eat the bird that might be on your feeder.
When you say a predator, do you mean like a cat?
A cat could be included in predators.
So I'm very concerned about feral cats and their attacking birds.
Yeah, and that's a big issue. And for sure, if we look at the literature, it suggests between 1 to 4 billion birds in North America are killed by feral cats and also our pets as well, but mostly feral cats in every single year. And so, yes, feral cats are a problem for sure. Outdoor feral cats, and also, yeah, your pets can be an issue if they're outdoors too.
So how high should you?
Ooh, great question. So I think we had them at least 6 feet off the ground, I think is what we did.
Okay. All right. Let me go to a caller, Zach, but the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You want to tell us about your bird feeding habits. And Zach, you're on the air. Go ahead.
My original question is about giving bread, bagels, tortillas, leftovers that people have to try and help the birds. We may be hurting them. I don't know. But now that she talks about elevation and feral cats, I can already think that that would be a bad thing if we throw it on the ground. I'll let you take my call from here. Thank you.
Well, Zach, thank you for calling in. What about that?
Yeah, thank you, Zach. Yeah, I think the general advice is not to give bread out to, we think about ducks, right? And I think it's not necessarily good in nutrition, but it also can expand the stomachs. And I tend that the advice is to avoid feeding bread and think about more perhaps scraps which have higher nutritional content, things like fruit and bird seed and things like that can be good. And then raisins as well can be good too.
Is it hazardous to leave it on the ground?
Oh, another good question, which I'm not sure the answer to. So I can come at this from a couple of angles. First, if you've got food on the ground, you could attract predators as well, and also pest species such as rats. And so kind of thinking more broadly, it might not be generally a great idea to put lots of food on the ground. But also some food could get moisture in it and become moldy, which might not be good for any animals that are consuming it too.
So the best thing is a bird feeder, which is something that would be hung from a tree branch or from some other post.
Yes. And also going back to the kind of keeping the food clean, we do recommend keep an eye on your bird food. Make sure it's not growing mold. If it is, throw away that bird seed and replace it with clean, fresh bird food. But also remember to regularly wash your feeders because they can be sites of disease transmission.
All right, so let's get to the nitty gritty. How much is it going to cost me to do this? And what kind of budget mm-hmm. should I be thinking about?
Well, that's a very, very broad question.
Okay, if I want to do this on a very, I'm not lavish.
Yep.
I like the birds, want the birds to be happy, but mm-hmm. I'm not going to give them the very best. What should I think?
Absolutely. So as you pointed out, bird feeding can be anything from like relatively cheap to really expensive, depending on what you buy. But you can simply put like a bird table out and put some scraps on it. Which could include some of the things we've spoken about, depending on what kind of bird you want to attract. And things like household scraps, raisins, you can put peanuts out, as long as there are no salted peanuts, right? So kind of like us, we don't eat too much salt in our diets. And that can be pretty cost effective to do that. And then also what's important is putting a water source out. And so you can put, a tray elevated above the ground with water in it, which can also
So you can do this useful. Without breaking the bank. There are ways to do this, with very economically.
Yeah.
And then if you want to spend more, spend more.
Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to take a break here. We got some callers on the board. We're going to get your questions when we come back from the break. We are talking about bird feeding, the types of bird species that we have in San Antonio, the interaction between the bird feeder and the birds. If you've got questions, give us a call, 833-877-8255. The source continues right after this 1 minute break.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're joined by Jennifer Smith in studio. She's a professor at the UTSA Department of Integrative Biology. So she's an expert on birds, backyard bird feeding behavior, impact on with bird feeding, What does it mean here in San Antonio? If you've got a question, give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Let's go to a caller. Is that Sheridan? Sheridan, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm so happy to have you talking about this today. It's something that's really important to me and my husband. We live on the northwest side of San Antonio in an apartment complex with a yard about the size of a basketball court. In the 10 years that we have lived here, we've had over 160 species of birds. We keep very close track of it. We use eBird and we verify with photographs. So there's an amazing number of birds that come through people's yard. And I wanted to mention the importance of water. We see more birds at the water than we do at the feeders, actually. Birds that don't eat bird seed will come into the water. And I just, you know, thought that was something that I could mention. That doesn't have to be expensive. We just put down plant trays, you know, like you put under a potted plant. We have a couple of those down. And we've had amazing numbers of birds coming into that.
All right. Thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it. So that's a lot of species of birds. Is that normal? Is that just over the years things change, or is it migratory patterns? I mean, what should I expect in my backyard?
And you live in San Antonio, right?
Yeah. Inner city.
Oh, well, that's another part of the equation. So simply put, Texas is a really birdy place. I think the numbers are about 660 species have been recorded in Texas over time, of which not all of those are like regular, but there's a lot of birds in Texas. And to kind of put that into perspective, there's about 1,000 species in North America. So we've got a lot of birds here in Texas. And in Bexar County, I looked at Mitchell Lake, which is a site on the south side where you can go birding, had about 350 species recorded there. And so I think overall in Bexar County, we've probably had about 400 species recorded ever. Now in San Antonio, we have lots of birds, right? And so that is I think it was Sheridan phoned in then. That's an amazing amount of birds and fantastic. And thanks for all the things you do for birds. But yeah, we can expect to see a lot of birds here in San Antonio. As you mentioned, there's a lot of migrants. So we don't have all those bird species here year round. About half of the birds we see are what we call near tropical migrants. So they're migrating to the tropical area in winter and breeding in more temperate areas here in North America. But there's a huge wide range of birds here in Texas. And actually it's one of the reasons that attracted me to find a job down here.
So are birds stressed right now? Like today with the 100 degree weather, it's been going on for a long time. Does that take a toll on their natural food sources? And so they really could use a break from a bird feeder?
Ooh, well, I'm not sure if it's from a bird feeder necessarily, but heat, like for us, can absolutely cause stress. And it can affect things like survival. Oftentimes you might see birds sunning or stretching out their wings, increasing body space, the area exposed to try and increase evaporation and heat loss and things like that. And you might see them panting is another way that birds get rid of excess heat. And then also visiting water features. That's another really good reason, kind of to Sheridan's point, to put out water features. So yeah, absolutely, like us, birds do get stressed in hot weather.
All right, let's go to another caller, and we have Jody. Jody, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Over the years, I've gone through a variety of bird feeders and paid quite a bit of money. It's mostly because of the squirrels. So right now, I have some really good squirrel-proof bird feeders, but they also are made for small passerines and like wrens. Sparrows and finches, and although I see cardinals and jays in my yard, I wanted to ask, you know, what do you think the best way to feed them, because the squirrels steal everything else in my yard. And I also in order to attract birds and keep them fed throughout the year, I also plant sunflowers and firecracker bushes, which the firecracker bushes attract the hummingbirds, and the sunflowers I leave them out after they're done blooming because I see the birds picking the seeds out of them all through the winter.
All right, Jody, thank you for that. Just get your reaction, Jennifer.
Yeah, Jody, thanks for that question. These are great points, and you actually raise a really important point here. We talk about bird feeding today, but making sure that you've got a diversity of native plants in your backyard which produce some of those foods that birds like is very, very important and part of the bigger picture. Squirrels, yes, squirrels are my nemesis, and I've done a lot of bird feeding studies over the years, and they are my nemesis. I feel like during my PhD, I spent more time fighting squirrels off feeders than collecting data sometimes. And I'm not going to kind of endorse brands here, but there are some really good squirrel-proof feeders out there that you can use. And as you said, they are kind of meant to be a little bit more for kind of your smaller songbirds in your backyards, but I would still encourage to use those. But feeders for bigger birds to avoid squirrels. Yeah, I don't know about that. I think if you invented that, you might be quite rich. But squirrels are definitely an issue. But keep up with those squirrel-proof feeders. Some of the bigger birds, such as white-winged doves, will actually feed under the feeders. So when food is spilt from those squirrel-proof feeders, so that can help, and blue jays too.
So there's a variety of bird feeders. When you go to the store, you know, natural store, look at them. They're all different types and sizes and shapes and colors. And if you're going to get multiple bird feeders, should I be thinking about as much variety with bird feeders, because some do better with other birds? You know, so I mean, I guess it's not a one size fits all for birds.
Yeah, and so like other animals, birds, across birds, there's lots of different diet types. So not all birds eat the same food. So we've got our what we call granivores, so seed eaters like northern cardinals, and then we've got nectivores, right? We're all familiar with hummingbirds. And then we've got some that eat fruit, such as the orioles, which are passing through and breed. Some of them are breeding right now. And so we can provide a wide range of different foods, from your typical seed eater can provide hummingbird feeders with nectars, but also put cut up some oranges and put those out to attract some of those summer visitors, such as those colorful orioles that you might see in your backyard. The big thing here is actually we know from research that disease transmission at feeders increases with feeder density. And so it is also important to keep those bird feeders clean if you are going to put out a lot of bird feeders, in a way to reduce the potential for disease transmission.
Another caller, Mark. And Mark, you're on the air.
Yes, I feed, I have three spots. I live in an apartment, so it's limited. I feed on the ground. I have 3-pound coffee lids, black lids that go on top. I fill those up with a very good feed, Pennington wild bird feed. And I have three spots within 15 to 20 feet of where I sit on my porch. And I have birds galore. I generally feed them twice a day. And I have anywhere from 20 to 30, 35 birds at a time that are coming in. I also have water out and what works as a bird bath. So I'll have 10, 15 birds in an inch of water, you know, cleaning themselves or just cooling off. But anyway, very tremendous population, and I just use these coffee lids. So they're
right. So it's, you know, doing what we can. Don't break the bank. You can do it, you know, very economically.
Fantastic example.
So what it seems like, you know, the caller, Mark, had the birds knew, they had learned that was a sweet spot to go to. They were going to get some good food. I mean, do birds, you know, learn about, do they get in the habit of going to certain locations?
Yeah, I think there's evidence to suggest that, for sure, yes. There's actually, we're doing some studies now looking at movements of birds around feeders in San Antonio, and the results aren't in yet. But we know that birds use central locations for feeding. Many bird species do, and kind of learn where good food sources are, for sure. So we'll come back next year and tell you a little bit about that research.
Okay. So a minute ago you mentioned diseases that can be coming from bird feeders transferring to other birds. So I wonder about avian flu. And I have heard, I read this when preparing for today's program, that there are times when there's an avian flu outbreak that they will ask people to take down their bird feeders. Have you, is that something that happens? Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, so to say up front, I'm not a disease ecologist, so the listener should be like a little careful of what I say. But what I do know is that avian flu is passed through things like mucus and saliva, which we know can accumulate at bird feeders. And so whether or not the CDC, for example, are asking to put bird feeders down, I'm not sure. But they certainly have had recommendations for how you keep poultry in your backyard. And so I would say, kind of just going on to my point, make sure that your feeders are always clean. The other thing I want to mention here, in terms of species that visit feeders, there's very, very low risk of those species carrying avian flu.
So trying to do this on the cheap, as I always am trying to do, save a nickel here and there. It seemed like if I go to the feed, my local feed store, like, you know, not the big box store where you get it, you pay like a lot more for a bag of seed than if I go to the feed store. You know, you can get it for quite a bit better. Is there any difference? Or there's a lot more variety too at the feed store.
Yeah, and so across companies, across types, very reflected in the price of the food. There's going to be different nutritional quality, and the kind of seeds that are in those mixes. And so I would recommend looking for one which has high diversity of seed. But having said that, you know, if you're on a strict budget, all of the feeds can be probably okay to feed birds, but it's probably going to be better if you put out, you know, food with higher nutritional quality. Kind of like us, right? If we have things that are higher nutritional quality and better for us, then that's a good thing for our health.
So what is the best way to clean a bird feeder?
Ah, yeah. So what we do is pretty simple. Hot water and soap. And just dunk it in a bucket. Yeah. And make sure all that old seed is out and let it dry in the sun.
And give it a good scrubbing.
Good scrub.
And yeah. And that will help stretch. And when's the best time to stock up? Is it in the early morning? Because you don't want to do it late in the day, because overnight, and there's no birds coming overnight, but there could be some raccoons and other things. So.
Yeah, so I actually would say any time of the day. So if you put it out first thing, chances are there's still going to be some seed in there at night. So our little raccoon friends might come to that feeder. But again, that goes to having squirrel-proof feeders there. They sometimes can be raccoon-proof too. So yeah, whenever it fits in your schedule, really, yeah.
All right, so there is no bad time to...
I wouldn't think so. I mean, one thing I would say is, you know... if there's a lot of feral cats around, you might want to make sure they're not all around when you're putting out bird food, just because they're going to be around and birds might come to the feeder and then there's going to be predators, right? But in general, I would say it's fine to put bird food out whenever fits your schedule.
All right, we're going to continue our conversation talking about getting the most out of your bird feeder for your enjoyment and for the benefit of the local bird population. What birds do you see at your bird feeders? How long have you been keeping that bird feeder stocked? And tell us about some stories about that. We'd love to hear it. Give us a call. Any questions you have, we've got answers. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And the source continues right after this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a large variety of bird species, and they are bolstered by backyard bird feeding. That's according to a recently published UTSA study. We're now joined by Jennifer Smith. She is a professor at UTSA, and she studies birds and helping birds, working with birds, backyard bird feeding, their behavior. If you've got a question, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you a backyard bird feeder? What have you seen? And what questions do you have about how to maximize the benefit? Let's go to David on the phones. And David, you're on the air. Hi, David. Are you there? Yeah.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you sound
great.
Can
you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, I want to thank you for taking my call, and I want to commend you on your great show. You have a great variety of political and other viewpoints on your show, including some that are unpopular. And so I commend you. But I also have some questions for Dr. Smith. I was looking at the press release from UTSA about her student, Amanda Lamberson. And as you know, David, UTSA was founded far, far on the north side, 50 or 60 years ago, by people who wanted to have the educational system far away.
And you're fading out. Okay, the call kind of dropped off. So let's talk about UTSA. Apparently, there's a bird that's very popular at UTSA. It's your mascot, the Roadrunner.
Yes.
Do you bird? Is there a bird feeder thing for a Roadrunner?
Okay. So Roadrunners eat a variety of things, including lizards, snakes, insects, and so, to my knowledge, not. But I do love Roadrunners. It's a great mascot.
So you just left to their own devices. We don't need to be creating some sort of feeding system for them. They're fine.
They're fine.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Now the caller was asking about, you know, the UTSA on the north side. Now we have UTSA is moving closer to downtown, right along San Pedro Creek. San Pedro Creek is being rehabilitated into more of a natural scape. Mm-hmm. That's happened, you know, with the River Mission Reach, and all these things are happening, creating kind of a wetlands sort of a. Is that helping birds come to the downtown area and creating more of a welcoming environment?
Yeah, so I can't speak exactly to that example you're giving, but we know down in Conference Park, forever on the Mission Reach, that there has been an increase in bird species since they've done kind of the work down there, restoration work. And so a wide range of different bird species are using that area, absolutely, year-round and during migration.
Even an eagle?
Ooh, good question. I've never seen an eagle down there.
It's been reported.
I was going to say, I wouldn't be surprised if one's been reported.
All right, let's go to another caller, Annabelle. And Annabelle, you're on the air.
Hi. I had a question about kind of like, I just read this really sad for me statistic as a cat owner that cats are like domesticated house cats and feral cats are one of the biggest reasons for native bird decline in their population. And so my question was, one, how bad is it? And then two, as like a cat owner myself, or even people that maybe don't have cats but they love birds, like, are there any steps we can take to make our backyards safer spaces for birds to eat without having to worry about predation, our pets?
All right, Annabelle, thank you for that call. And Jennifer Smith.
Yeah, so first of all, across North America, we know birds are in precipitous decline. I think the fact is it one in four birds over since 1970 has been lost? Now, cats aren't the main driver, habitat loss probably is, but having said that, cats are a really important source of mortality of birds. And so we know from recently published studies that between 1 and 4 billion birds are killed annually in the US by either feral or pet cats in the US. And so, yeah, it is a problem. It's probably the leading cause, one of the leading causes of bird mortality. And there's a number of things you can do. Big one that we suggest is actually keeping your cats indoors. We're not saying don't have cats, but having responsible cat ownership and having them inside is a fantastic step that you can take.
And get feral cats spayed and neutered.
Yeah, this is an interesting conversation. There's some evidence to suggest that trap neuter release programs, so where you neuter them and release them back into the world, can work, but actually most suggest that they don't work. And so the current kind of advice is to keep your cats indoors.
All right, let's go to the caller. We have Kyle, and Kyle, you're on the air.
Hey, David, thank you for taking the call. Dr. Jen, this is Kyle over at Wild Birds Unlimited.
Hi, I'm so Kyle.
I'm so happy to hear you, and I'm so grateful for the work that you do at UTSA in this field. It's so important, and I'm so proud that we have this work at UTSA. It's awesome for San Antonio and for bird conservation in general. So thank you for what you do.
And also thank you, Kyle. For those who don't know, Kyle's been a massive supporter of this research for many years. So thank you. Thank you, Kyle. You're awesome.
Happy to do it. And I joined the call. I joined the program when you were talking about squirrels and how to prevent squirrels. And I don't know if you talked about safflower, but safflower is a seed similar in oil and protein content to black oil sunflower. So it's very healthy, very nutritional for the birds. It has a naturally bitter flavor that squirrels pick up on and they don't like it. And so we've had really good success with using safflower seed. If you have a squirrel problem, safflower seed has a naturally occurring bitter flavor. And the squirrels, unless they're extremely desperate, they'll stay away from it. So that's a good solution. If somebody doesn't want to invest in a high dollar squirrel resistant bird feeder, they can change up the seed that they're using and try safflower seed, and it works very well.
Great. Thanks, Kyle.
Kyle, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Appreciate your help.
Thank you, guys.
Let me ask you about microplastics in birds. Mm-hmm. We've been hearing about how it's a problem in humans. We're eating a lot of plastic, apparently. It's all through the ecosystem. What impact is it having on birds?
Very good question. So a lot of research in this regard has focused on marine birds. We don't know much about terrestrial birds. So my lab is currently doing a study to ask the first question is, are our birds in urban areas eating microplastics or consuming microplastics? And so I don't want to spoil the story too much. This is led, by the way, by Lexi Baum, who's a graduate student in my lab, and also Marielle Ortega is doing some research in this regard. We're seeing that a lot of birds have plastics in their gut, in their GI tract. And so for some species, we're seeing about 70% of the birds that we're testing have microplastics in their GI tract. Now, the second question is, so what effect is this having? But we're not at that stage yet, but we are going to address that question.
All right, let's go to the caller. Let's go to John. And John, you're on the air.
Hello. Hey. My question is about a bird that I'm trying to discourage. What am I talking about? Grackles, of course. I have a big, beautiful red oak tree in my front yard. Every year, it's full of nesting grackles. I've used the recorded hawk sounds. I've put plastic hawks out there. All that does is discourage the birds I'm trying to keep in my yard, not the grackles. I'm sorry, they're nasty. They cause health problems. They're difficult with the sound. Love my tree, nobody else's tree. What can I do? Thank you.
John, thank you for the call. The grackle problem.
The grackle problem, the HEB bird. if I could address this question, I think I would be very rich, and I don't know the answer to it. One thing we do know is grackles are gregarious species. They do really, really well in urban areas. If I can find a solution to them not congregating in your garden, I'd be very rich. But unfortunately, I don't have an answer for you.
Well, what is the grackle story? What are they? Is it a native bird? Or would it look like crows? Are they a crow? I don't know anything about them. I just see them and, roll my eyes.
I love grackles. They are not a crow. They're an icterid. They're a songbird, as are crows, but they're from different taxonomic groups. They are native, and they have likely increased in numbers over the years, possibly due to agriculture. They do really well in urban areas. They have all the traits of birds that we think about in urban areas that do well. So being gregarious, having a fairly wide diet.
What do they eat?
They're pretty omnivorous.
Are they keeping down to insect population, mosquitoes or anything?
They are likely eating insects, for sure. And then they're going to be eating all of the things they see on UTSA campus, like fries and bits of Chick-fil-A and all those kind of things too. But do very well in urban areas, do grackles, for sure.
And there's nothing that can be done that you know of, you know, playing, you know, Nickelback loud or whatever it is?
Good question. I would imagine there's some deterrents you can use, but I haven't kind of evaluated on any of those specifically on grackles.
All right. Okay. So you're saving that for...
For next time.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So we're going to take another break. It's a 1 minute break. We'll get some more callers with your questions on the air about the local bird population, about bird feeders, and why can't we all just get along? And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Jennifer Smith is with me, professor of biology at UTSA, specialist in birds. You can give us a call with your questions and comments about San Antonio's bird population, 833-877-8255, about bird feeding, bird feeders, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to David on the phones. And David, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, David. You're on the air.
Yeah. Okay, real quick. Years ago, maybe 8 years ago or so, I read an article in San Antonio Express News about the Egyptian geese that are roosting down along the San Antonio River. If I remember correctly, I think they're trying to capture them or say they want to get them because something in their fecal matter is a threat to other wildlife. And the other question I have is, I noticed that sometimes I'm guilty of feeding birds with, you know, breadcrumbs and all that because I live in the downtown area. So I see them, and I sometimes notice, like, there's a pecking order. Little sparrows or finches, whatever you call them. And then the blackbird, sometimes one will give, like, the other one permission to eat what I threw out there. And then it reverses. Is that just something common, like we have in the human trait? Like, if you get there before me, I'd let you take your turn, then I take my turn afterwards?
All right. So how does that work out with the birds?
Yeah. So I'll address the second point first. Absolutely, there's a pecking order, both across species and within species, for sure. And I forget which the dominant species are in San Antonio, but yeah, that great observation. You will notice that at feeders, for sure. There's kind of the species that are a bit more aggressive versus those which are perhaps smaller and less aggressive, for sure. Even within a species.
So there's Egyptian geese,
yes. So I'm not sure on the recent proceedings, but for context, Egyptian goose is a non-native and some might say invasive species here in Texas, which can be aggressive, and their fecal matter, like other waterfowl, can contain E. coli, which can be of health concern, for sure. And because of that, the species is something that people do want to manage, but I'm not sure what the city are doing right now.
Do we know what is the most dominant bird species here locally?
Oh, dominant.
I mean, the biggest or whatever, the most of them, most populous.
Oh, most feral pigeons downtown. No, I don't. Yeah, it's a great question. Grackles must be pretty up there, right? And then feral pigeons. Those are both two species that do exceptionally well in urban areas, for sure.
All right, let's go to L.A. Is that right? L.A., you're on the air.
Thank you. I'm wondering about when putting water out for the birds, do we need to be concerned about the temperature of the water? Like, do we put ice in it, just cool water, or just water at room temperature?
All right. Thank you, LA.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for your question. Good question. I would put water out that replicates kind of the temperature in the natural environment. So no need to heat it or cool it. What I would say is make sure that you're changing it regularly. Again, kind of just because of disease and things that might occur in water, bacteria and things like that. So, you know, especially in warmer temperatures, I'm guessing that bacteria is going to grow more. So just be sure that you're changing it regularly.
Another caller, Suzanne. And Suzanne, you're on there.
Hi. I just have a comment on the trap neuter release about cats. I live in northeast San Antonio in a condominium. We had a terrible feral cat problem when I moved in. I got the training from San Antonio Feral Cat Coalition. I began trapping and releasing. The cats stay around. They guard the territory. And I feed birds on my balcony with no problem from cats at all. So I just didn't want to discourage people from dealing with the cats in that way that helps the cats as well as the birds.
All right, Suzanne, thank you for the call. We appreciate that. Well, let me ask you about birdhouses. Do birdhouses, are they helpful? Do we need birdhouses? Well, I mean, they build nests. What do they need a birdhouse for?
Good question. So first of all, so it's going to depend on whether or not natural cavities are limited, right? And so in urban areas, they're probably not. There's lots of nooks and crannies in trees and in houses where some of our feathered friends can certainly live. But we do know that birds are attracted to birdhouses and it can provide additional places for them to live and breed. And so do they need them? Probably not. But it does attract birds to the backyards, which we know can have lots of benefits for us, right? We like seeing birds in backyards, and there's lots of research out there to suggest that having backyard birds increases mental well-being and relieves stress through simply watching those birds.
Linda is on the phones, and Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for a wonderful show. I just wanted to mention, we use on the pole that we have our bird feeder on, we have a bird buddy. We ordered on Amazon a squirrel baffler, B-A-F-F-L-E-R. It's like a funnel, and if you put the pole up high enough, they just can't scurry up there and get to the bird food.
All right, Linda, thank you for that tip. A way to keep those pesky squirrely squirrels, away from your bird feeder. Not all birds need bird feeders. Let's talk about owls. So do we have owls in San Antonio? Like what's the owl situation?
Yeah, so I love owls. So I've just had a student, Jose Vela, who's just finished up looking at owls in San Antonio, and preliminary results, but suggest that owls are widespread in San Antonio, especially great horned owls. And so I encourage you to go out and listen for them during their breeding season, for sure.
When's that? Breeding.
So you can hear owls really any time from kind of, I don't know, the fall, kind of December, and maybe even a bit earlier than that in San Antonio, and then moving through to the spring. And so they're highly territorial, and so they mark their territories and communicate with one another using those hoot calls that we're really familiar with. So, yeah.
Looking at the owl population, are they having to deal with issues of poison and stuff like that?
Yeah, so you raise a good point here. So actually, Eris Gomez, who was a student in my lab a couple of years ago, did a fantastic study looking at how many owls we see with rat poison in their systems. And so Eris tested a wide number of different species here in Texas, and focused on the great horned owl, which, as I said, is a common species here in San Antonio, and found, I think it was 53% of owls tested had traces or even more than traces of rat poison, in other words, rodenticides, in their systems.
And that was negatively impacting the owl?
Well, we don't know that for sure, because a lot of the birds came from rehab centers, and it's unclear whether or not those birds were submitted to those rehab centers because of poison or for other reasons. But certainly some of the birds that we tested had known lethal limits of rat poisons in their systems, and so that definitely can't be good. And even if a bird doesn't have lethal limits in it, just having poison in you can impair things like movement and other things, which could ultimately lead to, you know, deaths for other reasons. So it's not good.
All right, another caller, Jason. And Jason, you're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering, I see the white-winged doves are kind of gluttonous sometimes. They eat like a lot of the food, and I'm just wondering if they just come and eat all your food and they don't go and eat what they normally eat, if that's going to, you know, somehow change the ecosystem or change their habits in the long run to, you know, eat less wild foods and stuff.
All right, we apply some game theory to the bird feeder.
White-winged doves. We see a lot of those in San Antonio, right? And actually, this is you bring up some questions that we're really interested in. Actually, like, do they stick around in urban areas or do they move to agricultural areas in the non-breeding season, which we expect they might do? So this is a bird that does feed at our feeders, but likely also eats kind of grain and things like that in agricultural landscapes, especially during those winter months. Whether or not they're sticking around in urban areas, we don't know. We do expect they are actually. I think we do know that they're here year round, right? But traditionally, they would have been more of a migratory species, but we are seeing them move further north and sticking around in urban areas such as San Antonio, where, you know, 50 years ago, they wouldn't have been so common.
And let's go to Jean on the phones. And Jean, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, David, for this program. I'd like to go back to something that one of the caller said, I believe it was Suzanne, about trap, neuter, and release. And your guest also said trap, neuter, and release. It's trap, neuter, and return. And the Feral Cat Coalition calls it that too. If you take it back, the cat back to where it is, it does absolutely, like Suzanne said, protect its territory. It's very effective in reducing the population of feral cats around you. It really works if more people would get involved with it.
All right. Well, Jean, thank you for that. And as we wrap up, let's talk about hummingbirds quickly. So hummingbirds don't need seeds. They need sugar water.
Yeah.
So does it depend on what I sweeten the water with? Is it got to be, you know, cane sugar? Or what am I putting in there?
I would use white standard sugar you buy in the store. And I think you can check this online. But I think the quantity is one part sugar to four parts water. Just standard white sugar. Don't put dye in it. They don't need that. And change it every couple of days because, you know, the heat, especially in the San Antonio summer, can make it a bit nasty.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. But, you know, the hummingbirds will find it and they will appreciate it. And they'll tell their friends.
They might tell their friends.
And so pretty soon you've got a lot of hummingbirds in your backyard.
Hopefully.
All right. And so, Jennifer Smith, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us understand our natural world, the birds around us, what we can do to take some of the stress off them. We appreciate that. Professor at UTSA.
My pleasure. It's been wonderful being here. Thank you.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.